Welcome to the Good, the Bad and the Ugly podcast with me, Tony Manel, and this week's special guest is Kira Redmond. This lady is such a brave individual. Her story is one that nobody should ever experience, and I mean nobody. We're looking forward to Kira sharing the good, the bad and the ugly with us. How are we, Kira?
I'm good, thank you for having me on.
Thank you very much for coming. Very I know much. You've got a very, 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 very powerful story. I know you want to raise awareness and, you know, you reliving stuff, what we're going to get into and we're going to speak about on the podcast. I just want to say thank you. I think you're a very brave individual.
Thank you very much.
Very strong lady. And it just goes to show what, you know, there's people out there who might be suffering in silence in regards to what we're going to get into. So, yeah, I just want to start from where you grew up, where you're from, family life and what school life was like.
From Dublin. I was born in Dunleary in Dublin, May. Obviously in Ireland. Moved over there when I was about Greg, I'm one of four kids. There's two eldest, me, and then I've got a youngest. And then, yeah, we moved to Manchester. Why we'd move to Manchester? You know, you've got a pick of anywhere in the world, and you just bought Manchester. Well, yeah, I grew up in Manchester, yeah.
So your mum, your dad, and your three brothers and sisters or whatever?
Yeah, I've got sisters, two brothers, and my mum and my dad, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Can you remember, like, what it was like growing up when you moved to Manchester?
Chaos, can you imagine, can't you? Four of us were in an Irish household and everyone just shouting over each other to be heard. Yeah, it was just absolute chaos when we was growing up.
Yeah, so it's like times going to school and that was the much difference in age between you? Or?
No, there's not much difference at all. My older sister's 5 years, my older brother's 22 months and my younger brother's 3.5 years, I think. Yeah, something about that.
Yeah. So it was absolute chaos.
Yeah.
Just a normal family home though, innit?
Yeah, it was. Until my little brother, he was little, I think he was about 8. My little brother got cancer. So we changed the whole dynamic in the household.
Yeah, so obviously it's a bombshell, like you say. And he was 8 years of age.
He got throat cancer. He was fine. They just thought he had like a cold. And I went to school and, I remember my dad saying that my mum was at the hospital with my little brother. She took him and, you know, they opened the mouth, don't they? And the tumour was just there in his throat. Said another 24 hours, it would have suffocated his windpipe. I remember my dad coming home and telling us.
Young age, you know, it's, but you can always remember words your dad speaking to you about it. And
yeah.
As a child, I mean, how did that feel, you know?
It was confusing because my mum's dad, who still lived in Ireland, he had cancer, but he was dying. So I think when you hear cancer, that's the first thing you think of, don't you?
Yeah, it's a horrible word, isn't it?
And you look at him and he's tiny and you just think how, you know, how's his body got that kind of thing?
Yeah, how is your brother? You know, he's just a kid, isn't he?
Yeah.
So from there, you know, was it curable or?
Yeah. He's been in remission now for some good few years. We went into remission and it come back. But luckily now, I think he's been in remission now. I can't remember how old he is. Well over 11 years, 12 years, I think he's been in remission, if not a little bit more.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So from then on, obviously that bombshell, you know, family life growing up, you know.
Everything changed because my mum went to live at the hospital. They've got quarters, haven't they?
Yeah.
And then my dad was working and then in the holidays we had to live there. So kind of sent me off the rails a bit.
Yeah, it's that. Sorted on a, you know, on a mad path. I think when we were all kids and stuff, you know, as you get to like teenage years and stuff, you sort of secondary school and all that. What was you like? Was you attending school?
Oh, I was terrible, me at school. Honestly, I was a nightmare. You know, they just called me a naughty kid. It got that bad. They were only allowed in till 9 till 11. And then they kicked me out in the end anyway.
Yes. We should be dealing with a lot as well, you know, family stuff going on. And then it's just, as you get to that age.
Yeah, because in a kind of way, like, it affects you, my childhood and everyone else's, so you kind of miss them years yourself because, like, my parents aren't there and, you know, they're at the hospital at work, so it's just like you'll get them for yourself, aren't you?
It's your own devices to do what you've got to do, and sometimes when you haven't got that what's-name, and it's no fault of yours or, you know, your dad's out earning money to try and put food in the cupboard, your mum's obviously with your little brother at the hospital.
Yeah.
It's, you know, when it's one of them, and like you say, you look back at it now as you're an adult and, you know, mum yourself, you think, wow, fucking hell, do you know what I mean? So from there, did you go to college or?
I did my exams. I started college. I wanted to be an air hostess. But unfortunately, I met someone when I was 15 who was nearly 40.
Do you know at the time that they were?
No, I thought it was, I was in my school uniform when I met him.
Yeah.
I mean, I was very old, old headed, but I was very naive at the same time.
You were mature and
I was lacking something, whether it was because of like what was going on at home. I was very naive. And I met him. I thought it was Twitter. I just thought he wanted to be my friend. Like, you know, me and my friends used to hang about with boys anyway.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's one of them. You don't have to. Yeah, and then I met him and shit just went downhill from there.
So it was like, did he be like, come a boyfriend sort of type thing?
Yeah.
And you weren't aware that, like, what age difference there was and stuff like
that. Yeah, and then he started battering me.
Knocking you about
and stuff. Yeah, knocking me about, and I was like, I was hiding it from my mum, because at first it was, you know, it was in the ribs, or, you know, he stabbed me in my leg, you know, and I just, you say to me, mum and dad, y'all have been fighting, you know, because it was a bit gobby and I was getting for it then. And they believed it, and then one night he put me in hospital, and it, you know, then they found out that I was lying, and then he was trying to keep me at home, and I was running away because I didn't understand, you know, the grooming process.
Yeah.
Until.
And it is grooming when you look at it.
I was much older, do you know what I mean? Like getting locked in the flat. And yeah, I had to drop out of college because, you know, it's all about appearances when you want to be an air hostess, innit? And going in with two black eyes. And I remember my tutor saying to me, look, I don't know what's going on, but you can't continue this course. And, you know, I was devastated because when we used to live in Ireland, my dad was a trawler man, so we trawled the world. So he used to always say to me, don't settle down. Put a bag in your back and travel the world.
Yeah.
So that was kind of what I wanted to do, but, you know, it didn't happen. You know, I was in that grip with him for well over till I was 16.
So it's like, you know, you're dealing with all that as well. And, you know, your college, the college side of things, was your, you know, how was you getting to college and stuff like that?
Walking.
You were walking to college?
A few miles, because
where you were living?
I was living with him by that time.
And you were living in like one end of Manchester and the college was the other end of Manchester.
Yeah.
How long was it taking you to walk?
An hour plus, if not more.
And then you've got to walk.
Walk back, yeah, you've got to walk back.
And then you just had like, this is what you wanted to go and do. You wanted to be an air hostess, you're going to college to.
Yeah, when I did my exams, it was the only, I got an A star to do it. So I knew I had potential to do it. And then it went to shit. And then obviously when you meet someone and they groom you, not, you chip away at your self-confidence, don't they?
Telling her all the nice things, the right things.
Yeah, the right things. Like,
but you're buying your stuff on whatever. Or...
Yeah, I remember the pair of day he bought me a pair of trainers, and then just for the fun of it, he took them off me and made me walk back to my mum's barefooted. It's just degrading things like that.
Like the control thing and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, very controlled. And I was locked in his flat at like all hours. Do you know what I mean?
Wow. And it just... To you, I mean, now as you're an adult and you're a mum and stuff like that, it's easy for us to say, why didn't you just fucking run away? And you've heard that off many people,
million,
do you know what I mean?
Times. I mean, you know, the thing is, though, I did run away plenty of times, but I think when they've got you in that control, they'll always, you know, we always had the power to, you know, draw me back in.
Yeah, yeah. And then what was it that, like you say, it was... He put you in hospital one night, did you say, yeah?
Yeah, he put me in hospital. He threw me off his block of flats. But I was pregnant at the time with his baby, and I'd only just found out. And I remember coming round on the bottom of the landing, and one of the neighbours taking me to hospital because both my eyes was closed over. Yeah. I had a Timberland boot footprint on my stomach.
Yeah?
Yeah, like a proper... He used to beat me up.
Yeah, he's had to put town on you there. Like
like I got a scar on my lip now and he split my lip open. It's coming through. Like I said, he stabbed me in the leg, cut my head off.
Fucking hell. And obviously, your dad and, you know, at the time, you know, was you keeping it all from him? And then.
Yeah, I was keeping it. I never told my dad. And then it come to light that someone called the police at the flat. And I didn't even know his real name. It was police that told me his real name and his real age, and they brought me home and like I
was that when the pin dropped? Then that was
The pin dropped then, but still wasn't enough to get away. Do you know what I mean? I still, you know, my dad said you stay in here and you're not seeing him, and I was like, yeah, whatever.
You sort of rebelled, like
just packed my bags and left, and then that's when I was kind of like his prisoner kind of thing.
Yeah, did he was he charged for what he'd done to you or?
Yeah, he was charged. He was sentenced to 5 years in prison.
Yeah,
and then a rape charge left on file. Because we went to court, but, you know, the judge stuck me in the chambers, and by then I was nearly 18. I was working with Child Protection Services for nearly 3 years. I wouldn't go to court.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking before about the old grassing thing.
Yeah, we was, yeah.
And it was only when, you know, Marvin was in jail at the time and he said to me, you can't grass on a nonce. Like, you don't understand what he's doing. They don't live on our wing. You need to work with him. And after 3 years, I did. And yeah, he got 5 years in jail for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and fully deserved. You know what I mean? Should have got longer. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Did half and got out.
This is crazy. Like,
stalked me up until 2019.
He stalked you.
Yeah. Stalked me up until 2019.
I'm sure someone would have put sort of stop to that. Like, you know what I mean? But like, going from there, where did your life take you then? From there,
I went off the rails from there. From there, I
drinking.
Yeah. No, I didn't take drugs at that time. I just, because I'd been out on the street so long since I was 15, like, I couldn't go back home. I couldn't cope with authority. Like, I couldn't take another person and tell him, you know, you're going to do this and you're going to do that. I didn't understand myself. And then I met Marv and, you know, it was Marv that got me away from him. I mean, I met Marv when I was with that guy.
Yeah.
And he was the one that said, like, what are you doing with him? Like, he puts girls to be prostitutes, you know, makes them smoke crack. And I thought, fucking hell, he tried to do that to me. You know, I'm glad that I fought back. And it was, like I said, it was kind of mad that got me away from it. But then I did go off the rails.
Yeah.
I discovered how to make money through crime. And
yeah.
I discovered the party scene with the older people.
Yeah.
And I was out grafting all day, every day.
You'd done what you'd had to do at that time. And unfortunately, like, these things, you know,
come about.
It just comes about, and I say to people, you know, it's when people are in a situation and that's the only thing that they know, and a lot of us don't agree with it, but when you want to put food in your stomach or whatever you've got to do, that's some of the type of things you've got to do.
Yeah,
I don't agree with it, but there's some things that a lot of us don't agree with.
Yeah.
But when you haven't got an income coming in, you're going to do anything to survive. That's
of course,
the word,
yeah.
Isn't it?
No, we're not proud of things we do, but, you know, I think, you know, if you've got to do what you've got to do to survive, it's a different time of criminality to like nonsense, isn't it?
Yeah, well, this is it, isn't it? So obviously you met, you know, you come away from this guy, he was sent to jail and whatever, and then after that, was it, you know, did you meet Marv, or was you working as well?
No, not at the time. No, I met Marv. And then, I met Marv, and then me and him got friends, got close. I knew straight away he was a drug addict, so he had been scoring drugs, but to me, it didn't matter because I was in that scene.
You were around it, didn't I?
Yeah, I was around it, and then, you know, I met him on New Year's Eve, Marv, and then he gave me his number. We swapped numbers, and he was like, phone me if you ever need me, and he rang me, and that Mark, the guy, he was leveling me, so Marv came and, you know, rid up. And come and save me. And then, I went to, I wouldn't go back home. So Marvin said, come and live at my niece's with me. But, you know, he was out on license and all that. You know, he was a drug addict. So within like a few weeks, he was back in jail. But I carried on staying with his niece. I lived with his niece for over a year.
Yeah.
You know, while he was in jail.
And then from there, did you start working?
Yeah, in there, I put myself in an almost hostel. I was still grafting, and I was doing fraud, and that was a bit ever. You know, you've got Marv on the phone saying to me, you're out of order, you know, you can't be out here robbing. And I'm like, you're in fucking jail. But he was like, yeah, but, you know, it's different for a women's jail. And then, Marv got out, I got my own place. I was just trying to live a normal life. As normal as you can get with Marv, you know, the police coming through the door and all that.
Yeah.
Constantly. And I was trying to keep myself out of trouble.
You were trying to just, like, go down the street and narrow. And like you say, you know, we had Marv on the podcast a couple of weeks ago and stuff. And he's had a life which is, you know, is beyond, you know, when people see and hear it and listen to it. And obviously he's got a book out and people can have a read of that. And it is very, you know, dramatic what's gone on. But like you're saying, he was a drug addict and stuff like that. And then for you to wanting to do, you know, go through a normal process of life and, you know, was you working? Did you start working and was it waitressing and stuff like that?
Yeah, that was a few years later. I wasn't working at first. Obviously, with all that Mark stuff, I didn't know whether it was coming or going. And then, you know, at just 18, I've got my first flat and it's like, fucking hell, what do I do for me now? And then, I got a job waitressing about a year later after getting my flat.
Yeah. So from there, you know, the night that obviously changed when you was attacked by, quote, a textbook rapist. He was a serial rapist.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us exactly? Yeah. Can you do it? Obviously, you're reliving it. And
I got a new job as a waitress. I was finding peace by then. Just letting go of the mark thing after 6 years. You know, I was 21 then. Obviously, when I got...
Still only young, no, Kira?
Not in my mind.
21.
Though, yeah.
You know, like now I have a daughter who's 20, she's 22 soon. That's young.
Yeah, of course.
I'm like just speaking to you for like 10 minutes now. What you've been through there... It's like you've had a lifetime.
Yeah, of course.
No one should experience that in them, like 60, 15, 16 to in them.
Yeah, of course.
It's scary. It's madness.
Yeah, so, I got a job as a waitress. I was still with Marv. And I went to do my first shift. Marv got sent back to jail that day. And smashed it, got the job. And it was in the summertime, and you know, my friends were like, come for a drink, celebrate. I've like been on my feet for like 12 hours. But I thought, you know what, I will. You know, I'll go and have a few drinks. But you know, when you get there and you're sober.
And everyone's blathered.
And they're absolutely annoying you. And me and my mate got into a bit of a tiff, and I thought, fuck, I'm going home. And I phoned a taxi, you know, it's 5 to 12. But everything I've been through, like, I'm not scared to walk my streets.
Yeah, cool.
Do you know what I mean? I'm not scared to walk my streets. And anyway, this taxi driver coming, he was going on funner. Like, he said, I was going around the corner, like £3.50, not even. He went, I want 20 quid. So I went, all right, I'll give him 20 quid. And when I got in, he went, I want another 20 quid. I went, what do you want another 20 quid off me for?
When you know what the fare is.
I know what the fare is. And he was making me a joke. I said to him, fuck off, I'll walk it. So I've walked down that road at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And I was knackered, and I thought, can't wait to get home to the dog.
Yeah, get in bed, have a shower, get in bed, yeah.
Because I've got work at 9 o'clock the next morning. And it's like a country lane. What, once you're at the top and you come down, you can't cut off.
It's just a street.
Yeah, you can't cut off because there's no cut-offs. And I remember just getting to the bottom of the lane thinking, oh my God, I'm nearly home. I can't wait to get in bed. And I start like blow to the side of my face, repeated blows. And I thought...
It just happened so quick.
Absolutely, within less than 5 seconds. And I just thought, am I tripping here? What's going on?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And that's when, you know, I was dragged to the floor and came face to face with this serial rapist that I didn't know at the time. Put his hand over my mouth, wondered why I got knocked out. And later on, I found that he put chloroform over my mouth. But because I've been knocked out that many times off that mat, like literally a bit, I can come round quicker. Yeah, that's what the hospital said. I can come round quicker than, say, you know, a girl that's never been knocked out as many times that I have. And I remember getting up and I had no top on and like, oh, my pants was ripped.
So you're basically naked?
Yeah, I was naked and I'm on the floor. And what had happened is Marv had broke my phone the day before he went to jail. And he bought a cheap one in the meantime, but he'd give me the money, you know, to replace it, and because he knew he was going to get a sentence.
Mm.
And I had 300 quid in my handbag. And I remember being like, I can't see out my eye. And I'm rubbing sweat off my face. And I'm like, yeah, mate, just take the money. Like, you don't have to do this. And I'll never forget the words. He got the money, put it back in my bag, and he went like that to me. It's not about the money. It's about teaching little bitches like you that can't walk the street with men like me. And it clicked in my head, and I thought, here we go again. And I just kept thinking in my head, because the night I met Marv, Mark raped me. Like, for the final time, he laid me. He was doing it all through when I was with him anyway, but the one on the New Year's Eve, that was just, it was a humiliation, because he knew that, because I'd not been with him, I'd only gone back to meet him because he had pawn tickets of my nana's jewellery that he pawned.
Yeah.
And, you know, we promised him, you know,
if you come and see him, he'd give you them back.
But he didn't. So I remember when getting attacked off that Adam Down, we're thinking, this can't happen again. Like, I'm literally over just getting over Mark. You're not going to get over this. So it's like, you've got to find a way to fight your way out of it. And I remember, like, I couldn't stand on my foot. And I found out why. My toes was broke on my foot, like, the way he was dragging me. And he just kept hitting me and hitting me. And I was like, mate, like, I'll do whatever you want. Just please stop hurting me. Like, I had bite marks all over me.
Fucking hell.
Where he was biting me, like slamming me head on, you know, to the floor.
How long was this going on for?
Well, when you go to the police and you've got CCTV footage, and what had happened is, when I was coming down the lane, I've gone to phone my friend in bed. So obviously they go through your call records thing. And the police said nearly 40 minutes.
40 minutes?
Nearly 40 minutes from start to finish.
That's fucking horrific. I mean, you know, well, I mean, I'm not too, what's named on it, but, you know, rape cases and stuff like that, you know, it's minutes, you know, it's a tat, you know what I mean? 40 minutes.
40 minutes from the start of when he's, when he's seen me, because he's seen me, he's at a petrol station, and he's seen me, and he knows I can't get off that lane.
Because, like you said, it's no cut-offs and nothing.
I can't get off that lane, so he's gone round. Because I could have walked the long way, but I thought, well, I'm going to put 15 minutes on.
You're tired, you're exhausted from work.
I just want to go home, and like I said, I've done it before, do you know. I've been looking for Marv when he's, you know, ran off, and, you know, I've walked the streets.
Looking for him.
Yeah.
So you don't feel fearful, you don't feel, you shouldn't be worrying to walk the streets.
Scared, you know what I mean? Because nothing, even though we've gone through all that with Mark, nothing like that, you know, had happened on the streets to me. So to me, the streets weren't scary, but yeah, when they get the evidence back and you see him at the petrol station, you see he's running around and he's following me, and it's clear that I can't get off that country lane. So from me walking down to the end of the attack, it was like 40 minutes.
Obviously, down that lane, there's no CCTV, but...
No, there's at the top. And then even at the bottom, there isn't, but it's a one-way street. So obviously, in his head, he's known, there's no where he's caught me as he's come out the bushes. No one's going to go past there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can't go up that way. And then, yeah, I remember him dragging me about by my hair. I mean, knowing it was going to happen... Like, I knew it, and I just thought, I won't get over this one, and like, I won't get over it. And I remember going, mate, I'll do whatever you want. Just, I needed to get up off the road, because every time I got up, I stumbled.
Because your toes were broken.
But because of the chloroform, it felt like I was drunk. So every time I got up, I flopped back down, and I was a lot heavier. I was 15 stone then. I was a lot bigger than I am now. So obviously trying to pull, you know, my weight up.
And then him on top of you as well.
Keep knocking me down and trying to get my pants down. And then, like I said, I realised, and I was like, just, I'll do whatever you want, like. And I was saying to him, we need to get off the road, like, we're too exposed, like, you don't know who's going to see you going past, and I'm just trying to get a plan in my mind.
To try and get away from him.
And I remember him, like, dragging me in the bushes, and he's gone to take his pants down, and, like, he's got the back of my head, and he's, like, taking clumps of my hair out, like, trying to force me down to his crotch. And the thing was, I could fight, but I could never fight with my left hand. Mm. And Marvin was training me, you know, after what happened with Mark. And like I just said, you can't go up that road. But fortunately for me, someone didn't know that. And someone went to drive up that road. And as he had me down by his crotch, he's the headlights have
shined on.
Yeah. And he's gone like that. I've jumped up, and that was my opportunity. I banged him out. And I'm running and I'm screaming, like, I've looked down and, like, I've got no clothes on, but I've just kept thinking, and I'm knocking on doors. And honest to God, on my life, people were coming to the window going, no, go away, go away. And I'm thinking, where the fuck is that? Like, if you see a girl and she's half naked, you know, you're going to come to the door. I'm not trying to rob you, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I must have knocked on about 4 houses, and it was all the same answer. And I was getting really scared, thinking,
is he, you know, behind? He's
how
come
far
back
behind is that?
Yeah.
And got to this house round the corner, and I tried the handle. I didn't even knock. It opened, and I stumbled in. And the woman's like, looked at me and go, don't touch anything. And I'm thinking, yeah, why is she telling me not to touch anything? Well, that sweat I thought I was wiping off me, it wasn't. It was my own blood from my head to my toes. I was pumping.
From what he'd done, he done, he attacked you.
Blood out my nose. Like, honestly, it was bad. And he took my mobile. So it's, he left the money in my bag, but he took my mobile and my ID.
Yeah.
But not the money. So, but my dad always had the same number till he died, and I kept saying, phone my daddy. So when she's rang him, she's put him on loudspeaker, and he's thought it's that Mark got hold of me. You know, because he knows Mark's locked up, and this woman's saying, no, your daughter's just turned up on the doorstep, like, she's badly injured. And then I passed out, and I didn't I come round in an ambulance, and there was a male paramedic leaning over me, but I put two and two together and come up with 15, and I thought it was him attacking me. So I started attacking the paramedics, and then they sedated me, and I woke up in hospital and my mum was there, and then that's when I found out, you know, how serious like my injuries were. He broke my nose, broke my eye socket, fractured my jaw, popped the blood vessels in my eye. Like I said, broke my toes, bite marks, bruises everywhere. Like I'm going half blind.
Actually, fucking animal.
Going half blind now in my eye through it. Years later, because they needed to put a metal plate, you know, in my eye. But one, I wouldn't have one. Like they put me on a ward, and this woman went, "Oh, did your boyfriend do that to you? You know, you're a victim of domestic violence," and it sent me off my head. And I went to the police, "Get me out of here now." And they was like, "Kerry, you really need to have that operation, but it's going to leave you with a scar to scar." But fuck off. I'll deal with it at a later date, you know, like I am now.
And the scar, you didn't want to have the scar because people asking you all the time.
Yeah, they ask
questions,
like, that's
what people
they?
Do. Hey, what's that?
It's just automatic what you're going to do. Like, if you see someone with one, you know, you're going to stare, and I just didn't want it.
And you didn't want it to keep reliving? I mean, obviously, what this animal had done.
No, I just wanted to go home.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just wanted to go home to my dog, and I wanted to, you know, shut the door and forget all about it.
So your recovery, Kira, after coming out of the hospital, you know, to get your life, trying to get your...
I don't even think he did have a recovery for years, because when I got out of the hospital, like I said, my phone had gone missing and Marv was in jail, and they would be trying to contact me, and he'd be worried, you know.
But this animal, I took your phone.
Yeah.
I took your ID.
Yeah. So I had to go into, I remember getting home from the hospital and saying to my mum, "I'm going into town, man." She went, "What?" I said, "I'm going into town. I need to go and get a phone." She said, "Kara, come on. It's less than 12 hours after you got attacked. So do you need to stay at home and rest?" I said, "No, I don't. I need to get a phone." I said, "Because if Marvin can't get hold of me, I'll end up down the block."
Yeah.
So I went into town, and I remember a guy in car phone where I was saying, "Bloody hell, girl, what's happened to you?" I went, "Oh, I was in a car crash for me last night." I thought, "I'm not going through it."
Yeah.
You know, all the story. I went,
"So you're in town, but your face all..."
Yeah, my
mum
said, "Put some sunglasses on." I went, "No." And I don't know whether he was running off the chloroform or just running off adrenaline.
Adrenaline and stuff like that.
It was just like it was a normal day out.
Did you discharge yourself?
I discharged myself. And then I phoned my mate to come and get me to go into town. And she was like, "Look, are you sure about this?" You're like,
"Yeah, you'd have been through some horrific, horrific fucking incidents. And 12 hours later... You know, I think you're probably still from the adrenaline and the drugs or whatever they give you. You know, to be, because anybody experiencing what you've just explained,
we just want to go home.
Just want to know, or be in the hospital and you know, be resting up, and the trauma that you've experienced. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the police didn't even know that I discharged myself. Like they phoned my mum's, because obviously I didn't have a phone, and was like, "Where is she?" And my mum was like, "She's in town." And they was like, "What?" And then I went and got a phone. And I swear to God, like, you won't even believe this story. So I went and got a phone. And obviously, it was still my same number, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The minute I put my SIM card in my new phone, ping, ping, ping. People are ringing me. And I thought, who's ringing me? I've got this man phoning me. How dare you phone my girl, my daughter, telling her you're going to rape her. Got another person saying, how dare you message my missus on Facebook saying you've brutally... And everything they're saying, what this Adam Down was threatened him with, is what he did to me. And he's phoned multiple people.
Texting them.
Off my phone. He's gone on Facebook, like on my phone, given my number. So, like, it wasn't enough I'd been through all that. I'm trying to have to explain to a person, look, I promise you, it's not me, but can you imagine the, like, well, it's your number.
Yeah.
And I had to get support. I had to get the police involved with
it. Yeah, yeah.
And say to the police, look, like, I can't handle this. Like,
I'm getting all this after what I've just been through the night before.
Yeah.
So this individual who's took your phone is contacting other people.
Yeah.
And what he's actually done to you is threatening them to...
Yeah. Threatening to do it to them.
Fuck.
So, like, obviously, I was confused. Sort of. And said to the police, no, like, you're going to have to sort this out. And then the police said to me, we're going to have to put an appeal out in the paper for the car driver. I went, you can't put my name in it. Because by this point, Mar still didn't know. Because obviously, he's not
he's
even
in jail.
24 hours later.
He's locked away. He's going to be going. He's going to be bouncing off the cell.
So the police said to me, right, well, phone the governor. You're going to have to go on a special visit. Because we all know what he's like. You know, they know he's tempo and they know what he's like when it comes to me.
Yeah.
So I said, right, we'll do a special visit. This was 2 days later.
Okay.
The way I walked into the street, see what's mad? This side had a few little scratches there.
That's right.
Was 4 times as big as it should have been. So the way I've walked into Strangeways, I just look normal.
But then when you...
I've turned, he's gone to uplift the table, even though it's screwed down.
Yeah.
And he's just, he just went, I knew it was you. The way they've described where the incident happened, my age and what I looked like.
Was it on the radio or something?
It was on the radio and it was in the newspaper. And he said to me, I'd said to me, Padme, that sounds too much like my bird. It's the street behind where we live. And he was screaming, going, I fucking knew it. And I had to say to him, Mav, you need to calm down. They're going to rag you off this visit, you know. You know, you need to understand like what's happened. I'm safe. And whatever. And they tried to, he was up for him, sentencing 2 days later. And, you know, I wrote a letter, the police wrote the letter, and they didn't let him out. The female judge just said to me, sorry, it happened to you, but it's gotten out to him and he's going to jail. I ended up getting cuffed outside the court through it because to me, I was like, look at me, like, I need him. You need to let him out. Because, you know, I'd had to go back home and...
You know, that's in the back of your mind. Is he going to come to you? Like, that's, you think he could be thinking...
He's got me address. He's got me driving license, you know, and I live in a flat and mine's on the ground floor. So you can walk past my bedroom window. I mean, I used to put my dryer up at my back door and the couch up at the front door and, like, lock all the windows. And I had my dog, so I felt safe with my dog. I mean, I went straight back home. I didn't even stay at my mum's one night.
Yeah.
And my mum and dad was like, just moving in. I was like, no. It was, again, that thing, like, I don't need you to look after me. I can look after myself.
But after going through all that, Kira.
I think that's how I've always been, like, I'm still to this day, like, I don't need your help. I can do it on my own. And I'm thinking, I think that's through like what I went through with Mark. I think, you know, when you're out there and you've dealt with it all on your own, you know, it doesn't leave you. So yeah, I went back home. Yeah.
Okay, now and then from there, how did the case sort of like, you know?
So from there, I got attacked in May. I got attacked a week or two before my birthday in the May. And then Marv gets out. You know, the police are checking him, we are, you know. I'm not holding out much hope because he's covered up. All I can see is eyes, piercing blue eyes. So, well, you know.
That's the only description you can remember him
the
by.
Only description. So, you know, are you really going to have much faith in the police catching someone by
their eyes?
Colour of the eyes, you know. I can't really give you the height. You know, I didn't hear his voice or... I can hear snippets of his voice, but I ain't got a description. So I wasn't holding out much hope. And then I went back to work. I went back to work 3 weeks later. My boss said, as soon as the bruises go down, about 4 weeks later, you could come back. I phoned him the next week and went, can I just come back to work? And he was like, Kerry, you should wait. Just in like, I can't have you there with two black eyes. And I didn't understand it. I just wanted to go back to work.
Wanted to go back to normal.
Yeah, I was sick of everyone. Like, poor Kira, like.
Well, it's not poor Kira when you think about it. I know, obviously, you know, you're a strong individual and stuff like that, but to experience the level of extreme violence and disgusting things what this individual done, that's like how you know, even here today to share your story, I find you such a strong individual because I know there's people out there who haven't got the courage like you to speak out, but to go back. Wanting to go back to work after 3 weeks. Yeah. I mean,
it's some normality. I mean, I went to my nephew's christening the week after, and I've got pictures of it. And I look and I think, can I get it? You can't even see the white in your eye. Your blood vessels would pop that much. Like, what was you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what adrenaline was you running off? And then I went back to work and moved. Obviously, I needed to move out of that flat, got them to move me. And I'll never forget the day. My nephew turned one that day, 19th of September, and the police phoned me and they said, we've caught him. I went, what? I went, we've caught him. And I was like, you sure? You've caught him?
What was that feeling like, Kieran, when that phone call? What, how did that feel? Thinking, you know?
The blood just drained from me. Just, I went to jelly because obviously, like I said, I wasn't...
It wasn't holding up?
No, it wasn't holding up. And then he said to me, we need to come and see you. We need to discuss something with you. And I was like, wow, what's going on? I know what's happened to me, it's serious, but what's going on?
But you didn't know.
No, I didn't know. And when they come and they said to me, Kerry, you're one of six victims. You're number four. It's like, what? We found him 2 days ago at the last scene of The Last Woman. And I said to him, why didn't you tell me 2 days ago? You know, in shock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, they said, we've never had anything like this on our force team. Like, literally never. Like, we've got to go away. Like, you know, we will come back and we'll tell you. Like, we interviewed him last night, but right now we can't tell you the ins and outs of it. And I remember getting very angry, like, no, you will tell me. Like, it's not you he did it to. Tell me fucking yeah. now, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And Marv calmed me down. And then they came back the next day. And it's where it just, the whole story unraveled that he'd seen me, he was stalking me on that road.
He clocked you, had he?
Yeah, he clocked me and thought, I'm having her. You know what I mean? Like, he did it to three other women before
you were victim number four.
Yeah, I was victim number four. And, you know, they get him into the interview and he denies it to even him. But he's in his work van. You've got
the number of registration and all that.
But he's got the petrol seats. He said he was at home with his mum all night. He never moved. But
did his mum vouch for him as well?
Yeah, she spoke. But he was arrested at his girlfriend's flat. And in his girlfriend's knicker drawer was my mobile phone and other trinkets off other girls.
So what were these, like, memento or, like, you know, it's like...
But yet you're denying.
But what? Does Mrs. like these and the.
See, the police, that I was very angry and hateful towards her. And the police, they said she was vulnerable. Like, she had no family. You met her in a graveyard. It's very weird to me. Like, you don't meet someone in a graveyard at 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, you know, it's very weird. But apparently, she had no family. Like, so the only family that she had was him. So. You know, I look back on it now and think, was she brainwashed? I've got more. Even though they've never shown me any empathy, and she never to this day, even, you know, she was pregnant with his child at the time. He was having a little girl. You know, she was pregnant. He worked in a kid's school, in a primary school, as a cleaner. And where he got the chloroform was, he was training to be a paramedic. He worked for St. John's Ambulances. So
that's where he's got the chloroform.
Yeah. Because obviously, like, they cut your nails and everything, and like they swab mail and, you know, see if they can find any trace of him. But obviously, you find out later that they didn't because he wore gloves. So obviously, you know, you're not going to leave your fibres on there. So yeah, it wasn't me. I was at home with my mum. He denied even doing it to the last woman. He said he was helping her. You're not helping her with your pants down your legs. Only because her screams alerted bypassers and they detained him, obviously, you know.
Was it in the same area? Was it all in, like, all over Manchester, was it?
Yeah, it was all over Manchester and Stockport. That's where he was from. He's from Stockport. The girl that got attacked after me a week or two later, she lived on the street behind me. Yeah, she lived on the street behind me. The others was in the area, but not within the vicinity of, like, my flat. The one that I got attacked, I still speak to this day. It's mad. She texted me last night saying, I love you, girl. Speak to us to this day. He tries to kill her. There's a reservoir where it happened and he threw her in it. He threw it in and he tried to drown her, left her after brutally doing
yeah.
what he did. I mean, out of the six of us, you know, fortunately for me, I'm the one that didn't get raped, you know, even though
I attempted,
I got sexually assaulted. I didn't get raped. You know, you go to court and you hear what the other girls have gone through. And he left her for dead and went back to his girlfriend's flat. Googled on my phone, woman dead in Debdale Lake. And it came back, no searches, because she wasn't dead. She dragged herself out of it. And he robbed her locket. She did never get it back to this day. It had a child's dad's ashes in it and a locket. And he never gave it back. Never. And then, yeah, so he denied it. And he said, no, I was at home all night with my mum. So they go round to his mum. She's giving it, not moved from here all night, it's with me. So they said, I've got a search warrant. Search your house, if you're saying it. Never get over it, I swear to God. The police said, they showed me pictures and they said, we've never experienced anything like it. There was a bookshelf.
What they found?
And there was about 10, 12 books, all perfectly lined up in alphabetical order. How to asphyxiate women, best injuries you can inflict on a woman, these martial arts techniques of how to, like, knock someone out and keep them knocked out, how to rape women, like the most disgusting books like you could ever imagine.
He would have them books, you know what I mean?
It's... Well, when the police asked that question, his mother turned around and went, I bought them as gifts. I don't see the problem. You don't see, not one of them books did not relate to what he did to me and six other women.
As if that's normal. As if you're going to buy your son or your daughter, you know, books of that nature.
I bought him books. And then she still, even though, you know, they said, we've got petrol receipts, we've got, see, no, he was banged to rights on everything. Yeah, he's banged to rights on everything. He denied every single charge against us all. And then the police said, we're going to have to take it to trial.
He wouldn't plead, he put his all through that. Is what these individuals do, though, Kira.
Yeah, they get off and they don't.
They sit there in the dock and they look at it, you know, and it's the torment and the trauma and the victims have to relive that.
I think that's what they get off on, then. I realised that's what he got off on when we went to court.
And he made all 6 years attend court and all sit there while he sat in the dock while his family were there as well.
Yeah, but only I could... I sat the stand for 4 days because I had somewhat of a description of him.
You were there for four days on the stand?
Yeah, for 4 days. It was a 6 week trial. So when they come to me, but in between that time, I think I got it into me. They couldn't rate me because I was fat. So by the time we took it to trial, months later, less than 6 months later, about 3 months later, I can't remember off the top of my head. I'd gone from a size 20 to a size 6. I'd gone from 15 stone to less than 7. Like I was walking skeleton. I developed bulimia, you know, in the middle of it. And then the police have come and they said, like, we tried to not get you to give evidence, Kira, but...
Because we can see.
You've got to give evidence. And I remember saying to him, I'm not giving evidence. No, I'm not doing it. And I remember police officer saying, Kira, just please think about it. And then Marv, like... came on one night and he sat me down and he was like, babe, you just do it. Like, you're the strong one, do it. And I remember saying, like, all right, I'll give evidence. And like, when it first happened, you have to give a police interview. It's like a room. And I didn't realise mine went on for 3 hours. And I remember the police officer saying to me, God, I've never met anyone that can talk without taking a breath like you. Just
but what you've been through, don't care. Do you know what I mean? And this is another thing what we spoke about before we started. There's no such thing as it being a grass on a nonce or a rapist. There's no such thing.
I think it's just the sex offenders that they tell you that to keep you from speaking out and keep you quiet.
Because why? Because it's their fucking secret, so they don't get caught.
Yeah,
that's what it is. It's not grassing.
No,
it's simply not. You know what I mean? Your mom said it to me the other week. Me and your mom were speaking about it, and it's not grassing. At the end of the day. Like you said there, as if it was like a big chore to 3 hours. No, at the end of the day, what you've experienced, what you've had to speak about and relive again,
that's torment
and trauma for you.
I remember watching it back like, God, is that even me?
On the CCTV with the petrol station?
No, even in my police interview, because what's happened, you have to go back and you've got to watch it.
Yeah.
The police interview before court. And then when I got to court, I was like, the courtroom's there. They was like, no, you've got to go upstairs and watch your police interview. And I was like, what? No one told me that.
Mm.
So I've got to go to a separate part of the courtroom for 3.5 hours, watch myself, relive it, where the jury's watching it, he's watching it, and my family and his family are watching it. And they're all watching it to see what emotion I've got in my face, to see if the jury think I'm lying. I mean, I don't even think that should be allowed.
Yeah.
I don't think that you should be able to sit there and in the back of your mind knowing that there's a panel of people watching this at the same time as you thinking, is she lying? Like, she didn't cry at that bit. Like, you should be prepared for things like that, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, I got told, you know, on the same day, I didn't get told his family and his mum would be sat in front of me calling me a slag. Every time I spoke, you're lying, little slag. They give him a pen and paper to draw me.
You know, it's how you keep your cool after what the son had done.
I did, Martin. He got banned out of court for 2 days. They banned him out of court. I think they did that to piss me off. Like, he's allowed to sit there drawing us all. Like, there's just...
While he's sat in the dock.
He's sat in the dock. And I'm giving my evidence.
Smirking.
And he's being smirking. And
sniggering.
Yeah, and I've looked and he's got a pen and paper and then he's whispering to his briefing. You know... The breach, he's breached, he tore me apart.
Why are like the security, like, stop, like, just don't, as if, like, they've got, you know, they've got this power, this, to, like, the ordeal, what they've, you know, they've put, like, yourself and the other five victims through. You know, I just find it outrageous, you know what I mean?
It's unhuman, you can't, you know, there's something wrong with you, and I say it all the time, like, it's not normal to think you can get up one day and abuse kids, or, you know,
and go and attack people, rape and stuff like that.
It's not normal. And then, yeah, I had to give evidence, and he's banished, he was a vile man. Like, I don't think a barrister should be able to call, especially a sexual abuse
victim, the words that they use,
a liar.
Kira.
That's what he called me, yeah. You're lying.
And they want a reaction from you to sort of, you know, that Crown Court, anyone who's never been in Crown Court, it's a scary, and it's when you've got people who get paid to protect, like, to this animal, this rapist, and nonces, and you know, people who are not very nice people, how the words they use, and they try and get you, it's like poking a caged animal, and they're ready, you know, it's trying to get you to pop, to get, you know, your anger and all that. And it's, like you're saying, the words that they were using, what some of the words that they were using against, like, calling you and that, was
calling me a liar, saying it wasn't him, because when it got to court, and then they've seen all the evidence, it was, okay, I was there, but I was trying to help her. I seen someone else attack her. Well, you was either there or you weren't. So his barrister literally looked me in the eye as I'm talking to him and went, just admit it, you're lying. You are lying. You know, you're just trying to get some innocent man sent to prison for something that he didn't do. Like, why are you telling lies?
And the evidence was stacked against them anyway.
What you're gaining from telling lies? And I remember feeling like I wanted to lose my cool.
Get your cup of water.
But I remembered, like, the police saying it, and Marvin saying, just keep your cool.
Yeah.
And I just remember looking and saying, don't call me a liar. I'm not a liar. No matter how many times you say it to me, I'm not going to admit something that's not true. He's a liar and not me. But then even in the background, you could still hear his mum going, fuck, this is disgusting. The bunch of slags, a lot of them. So I'm meant to be able to give my evidence while they're sat there.
And they're saying, like, screaming obscenities like that.
Yeah.
And you just expect to take it and not react, but you're trying to keep you cool.
Yeah.
After the...
When I'd already asked for my family to be took out of the courtroom because...
You didn't want them to hear it.
No, I didn't want them to hear it. And that, I think that's what pissed me off, that when you... I had to go back and watch that evidence in the other part of the court. They didn't tell me. I should have been prepared, because I said to my family, I don't want you sat in there, kind of thing. But yeah, them defence lawyers are disgusting. I don't know how they sleep at night, man.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
But then when my lawyer come on, he just blew it out of the water.
Did he just rip them apart?
Just ripped them apart. Absolutely ripped them apart.
And you could see him just slowly, slowly falling apart.
Slowly. Like, we weren't there when that Adam give evidence. We weren't there, but, like, the questions...
Did he take the stand then, did he?
No, he didn't take the stand.
Yeah.
No,
most don't, because they're fucking...
No, he didn't take the stand. He just wanted us all to take the stand. And there was only me that took the stand. And then, obviously, like, you go in and you get sworn to, like, was this you that got attacked? But it was only me that got cross-examined. That's the word that I'm looking for.
None of the other victims.
No, they didn't get cross-examined. It was just me. And, like, he was saying, like, you can't recognise someone through their eyes. What you learn when you've been through something like that, they're saying it. So for me to doubt myself, oh, was it really him? Like,
it's the words they use, isn't it?
Like, because they've got a degree, they think that they're above you you know, they're better than you, and, you know, I'm just a waitress and I come from a council estate, so you think you can get away with...
You think you're better than me?
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
It doesn't matter what degree you've got or what house you live in, or we've still got two arms, two legs.
That's it.
And the thing is, no one deserves what happened to you. Nobody deserves that.
No,
and
them
other five victims.
No, they don't.
And then you got them people representing them, and you think to yourself, you know, don't patronise me or
that's
whatever.
That's what it is. They talk to you like you're a piece of shit, like you don't know your own mind, kind of thing. Like,
and then you're saying, calling you a liar, and when I'm not.
I think it's the worst thing you can be called, and especially, you know,
something
in it, like when you've been abused, like it takes all your courage to tell someone. And you don't, and I understand why people don't come forward.
Yeah.
Because that's automatically what they think they're going to get called, a liar.
Oh,
and I do understand it. I've spoke to many, many people that have reached out to me after the podcast, and that's what they said. I don't want to be called a liar. And I've got to the point where I'll say to him, I got called a liar, so what? So let them call you a liar, but go in there and prove that you're not a liar. Otherwise, none of them are ever going
to
get...
It doesn't mean nothing to me, whatever they think, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know the truth, and, you know, people look like, you know, from there, I'm going to speak to you about this in a minute, but from there, the jury, what was the score from there when you did, you know, you took the stand and everything from there, and then he started weighing up? What went from there? The jury, was it the jury found him guilty?
Yeah,
that?
The jury found him guilty. He was up on 11 charges, 4 against me, from rape to attempted murder. The jury retired at the end of the day, and when we went back at 10 o'clock the next morning, by 12 o'clock the verdict was in.
Yeah, within 2 hours?
But about 6 women and 11 charges, and the police looked at me, and that's when I first met the girl that got attacked after me. It was only me and her come back for it. And that's when I first met her. And the police said, we've never had a jury come back so quick.
So quick.
So then automatically I'm like, I've been through all that. Now he's going to get found not guilty.
That's in your head.
That's in your head. Like, why has it come back so quick?
Yeah.
So obviously you get ushered in. And then you've got to start from the first charge. So you've got to start from the first girl.
So they're going, reading it, going through everything again.
And then he heard the first guilty for the first charge that he was upon. And then it gets to mine and I, you know, I took a deep breath. And in the back of my mind,
you doubt yourself.
99% that he's going to get found not guilty on mine.
Well, George, what
he did. This is going to violate me like they did with Mark. And he heard that one first guilty for mine. And I've got up and I remember the police, like, I burst out crying. It was kind of the breaking point for me. Like, I'd been strong.
The weight.
It got too much. And the police officer said, please, Kevin, just sit down. Just listen to him telling you guilty. And then you'll always remember it. And whatever way I've got to sit back down, I've glanced and Adam Downworth has glanced at me and he's gone like that and smirked at me. After being found guilty of all them charges.
That's what his reaction was like.
He still smirked and giggled at me. Oh. It was just like, you've done all that.
Is that how he done it, yeah?
He just literally went, like he's on a day trip to Blackpool. Like you've seen your mate in the cafe like that.
Yeah.
Just no qualms about it. And then you went outside because it was all over every national newspaper and the press was there. And it was horrendous because, you know, even for months later, you know, they kept printing my evidence in the paper because, yeah, you know, I won't give him my story. I didn't, you know.
You were being approached to give your story, yeah, and all that. You don't need to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't want to do my story. And then obviously you go away and, we went away for 6 weeks and then you come back for sentencing day. And his whole family's there. His mum's front row seats. Your son is a convicted sex offender.
Rapist, yeah.
You bought him the books. She took the stand and admitted in Crown Court she bought him them books. She took the stand and then she comes back with his auntie and his baby's mum and she brings the baby in the courtroom. It's just like, it's so degrading.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, we've been put through all that. Like, you've just had a kid and all your family are here supporting you. It's like, you've got no morals. The thing is, though, right, there's no excuse for what you do, but some people have. I had a bad upbringing, whatever, whatever. He came from a good family.
Yeah.
His family owned their own business, you know, owned their own cars. Do you know what I mean? Like, again, like the barrister thought they were better than, you know, the scummy slags, as you know.
So to speak, that's, yeah, what you were saying, yeah.
And then when the judge did his speech, he said to him, and what's the most scariest thing about you? If any of these women had seen you at 12 o'clock at night, they wouldn't have crossed the... He was tiny, he was skinny. How he overpowered me is unbelievable, let alone 5 other women. Mm. And the way he spoke, it was childlike. That wasn't the voice that spoke to me.
It's like he had
Jekyll and Hyde. That's what the judge called him, and he sentenced him to a life sentence, multiple life sentences, with a recommendation that he serves 29 years, and he didn't even blink. He didn't blink.
And then just even pulling that face at you and, like, you know, your chart, he's been found guilty of what he'd done.
He didn't blink, like, your life would crumble. You're going to do multiple life sentences.
His family as well, though, just to be sat there, to be, you know, that you'd be... I don't even know it. I just to try and even stick up for him and You know, and then he's found guilty. I've got to be acting like that.
And, you know, there's mother's love, there is, but there's also limits to this shit. Have I ever found out that my son would do that, it's game over. That's it. You've lost the mum. I don't have a son.
Yeah, you don't do that. It's not. It's just something that's just.
Because then it's where have I gone wrong?
Yeah.
To raise someone like that. You know, I couldn't support him. You know, some people might think, well, you know, that's wrong, you know.
No, it's not.
If you want to go out in and flip
You have
me,
morals.
Yeah, of course.
You have morals and you know what's right and wrong.
Yeah, of course.
We all know what's right and wrong. That's fucking not right.
It's not right. It's totally wrong.
It's disgusting. But like you say, that mother's love, and I get that. But then the extreme violence and sickening things that this guy, not once, not twice, three, four, five, six times. Sorry.
And she would have heard so much evidence, because I didn't go in when other girls' statements was read out and all that. You'd advise to stay away. So I just sat outside in the courtroom and you're listening to it, you know. I kept thinking, is she in shock? You know, he's got to come to her when he gets found guilty.
She's got to get up and walk. I don't think I can't listen to this.
This is disgusting. Yeah, I'm like, I'm sorry, girls, what happens to you? Nothing.
You've never had an apology?
Never had an apology, not off one of them. Not off one of that family.
That is scandalous. So what, he was sentenced to
multiple life sentences.
With the what's the name?
Recommendation of 29 years.
Yeah, hopefully it's a rough fucking ride for them in there.
The jury come out for a drink with us on sentencing day. It was a four woman. She come out when they found him guilty. She said, "I promise, I'm going to come back for sentencing day." And obviously, you think, "Oh yeah, all right." Yeah. And she did. She come out. She come back for sentencing day. And went for a drink, and you know, we sat there. And she was like, "I always knew he was telling the truth." Like you could see.
It's mad that, as you know, from there, because you think to yourself, "Are they going to believe me?" Do you know what I mean? Even though what's happened to me and the evidence was so stacked up against them. But it's in the back of your mind thinking, you know, are they, you know, going to believe me? Do you know what I mean?
Are they going to get the match? Because I think what people don't understand is that being on the jury, it's not a job. It's just like you going on and doing it.
It's just normal Joe Public. People get a letter in the post and saying, oh, by the way, you've been called for jury service. Could be your next door fucking neighbor.
Yeah.
And it's not someone in a certain profession. It's anybody.
Yeah.
And I've known people, you know, to be called up. All mad cases could be like mad, like a murder charge or something. And obviously they can't tell you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But after it's been done and it's well documented, that's when obviously, well, I was called up for that. You know what I mean? Of course. But it's mad. But so from there, Kira, you know, have you ever, you know, how did your life start panning out from there? You know,
it was hard after, like through the court case, I tried to hang myself.
You tried to take your own life?
Yeah, I tried to hang myself. I couldn't cope with it. I just couldn't cope with the pressure.
Was you having flashbacks? Was you having just...
I can wake up and I'm like, what's that noise? And it's me. I'm crying, I'm screaming. And I went off the rails after I got attacked. Went back to work. I just wanted to work. I wanted to party. The maths.
Blank it all out.
Just blank it all out. Like, it wasn't, that didn't happen to me. Cough, that wasn't me that it happened to, kind of thing. And then, you know, I started getting back on my feet. Got a new job. Like I said, Marv never went back to jail. And then you kind of put it at the back of your mind. You do, but every time it's getting closer to the 2-year mark or the 3-year mark.
The date or...
Yeah, the date of when I got attacked. That's when I'll find myself closing in again.
You start...
Yes.
Start
remembering things. If you get the beginning, when you start healing after it, your brain blocks out a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find it in your memories. So it got to the point where I didn't like sleeping. So I'd go out partying and sniffing. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to sleep. Do you know what I mean?
That was your way of coping.
Yeah, that was my cope.
And do you know what, Kira? Everyone away. You're not the first person. So obviously, what's the name with that? Because people, there's women out there and there's men out there, you know, who've had, like, you know, been attacked or whatever, or certain things have gone on in their life, and they live in silence where you never, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you coming on this podcast and express, you know, explaining your... reliving that horrific, you know, incidents and stuff and what you've been through in life, you know, I think you're an inspiration. That might sound daft because
Thank you.
It, because there's women out there and there's men out there that just haven't got the courage to speak out. What would you say to anybody out there who's suffering in silence?
Don't. Just find your strength. Like, they've got that strength in them. They've just got to dig deep and find it. Like, when an attack like that happens to you, or you're getting groomed or stuff, they take everything from you. They take every bit of self-worth, self-confidence, but you've just got to dig deep inside yourself. And you know what? It's scary. I've never sat on a, like, I'm shaking now, and I've been doing these podcasts for a bit, and I'm literally inside. It's not easy, and I'll never lie to anyone. But even if you don't get that conviction, because so many years have passed or lack of evidence, you can still say that I stood up for myself. So you're the winner in the end, you know, because you voiced it. And this is what I'll keep doing with Adam. Adam thinks, or thought he could silence me, but Adam Downworth took on the wrong girl. I've got the biggest mouth from this side of Manchester to the next. And I'll never let him forget.
Yeah.
He has never let six girls forget him. So why should I let him forget? Why should I stay silent? Mm. And this is what the other people need to do. Don't stay silent, because, you know, they're going to win and you're going to live with the nightmares. And then it could happen to someone else.
Yeah.
And, you know, the cycle will continue.
It's just a knock-on effect, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just a knock-on effect. Like, when that court case finished, that's where Adam Downworth should have ended. But it didn't.
Yeah.
So 2019, Adam Downworth came back in my life via his brother. So what happened was, in 2019, I'm a little boy. Through what Mark, when, I told you before, when Mark threw me off the balcony, I got told I couldn't have children at 15. And out the blue, was with Mark 12 years, and I found out I was pregnant. And not long had him, he was only a few weeks old. And I was resting because he come by emergency C-section, we was very poor. And my phone was ringing, and I thought, who keeps ringing me? So I'm not listening to it. And Mark's coming in the kitchen, and he's gone, Kez, I've got something to say. And I went, what? He went, Adam Downworth's front page news. I went, what? He went, Adam Downworth's front page news. I went, I don't want to know. I got postnatal psychosis, so I got bipolar. So I got very poorly after having my son. And I remember my older brother ringing me, and I just picked up the phone and went, I know, put it down. And then it got to the night time, and the baby and Marv had asleep, and I thought, is he dead? No, he's not escaped.
You're going to have a look.
Because I won't be here. I thought, I'm going to have a look. I couldn't even imagine what was coming next. In the paper, because his brother's a nonce. His brother had been grooming 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old girls online.
So there's obviously something within the family, which is...
Yeah, went to court. Who was at court with him? His mum, supporting another one of their nonce kids. He got a conditional discharge and a fine. That's what he got. And he come, and the picture of him, when you look at the picture in the newspaper, he's coming out of court just like...
Is it blasé?
Blasé, like you've not just been in there for sex offences after what happened with your brother. Like, you're carrying on your brother's work.
Yeah.
8 years later, seven years later, your brother comes in the paper. So I know how I felt when, because my statement, what I said in court, then got reprinted through James Downworth, Adam's brother. So I know how much it traumatised me, brought on my nightmares back. And you've just done it again to five other women. You're making us relive it again 7 years later. It never goes away.
Yeah.
That's what I will say to people. Like, it's not easy. And, you know, speaking out doesn't, you know, wave a magic wand and...
It just goes away.
It never goes away. Like, people like yourself said to me, like, how you could do it. You just learn to live with it. Mm. It's like grief. That's what I had to understand. I was grieving my old life and figuring out how to rebuild a new version of me and my life. That's what it's like. But, you know, as every day goes on, even though you don't forget it, you get stronger and you know, you learn to live with it.
Yeah.
You know.
It's something that's no one really, here. You know, in a normal life, no one would ever have to deal with this, do you know what I mean? You know, something so horrific like this. But people like yourself, and I don't like using the word victim, you're an inspiration. Do you not think about going into schools, colleges, workplaces?
Yeah, I'd love to.
And you're, you know, if that's something that you're not pursuing, maybe.
If I was given the opportunity to, I would. Mm. I would, definitely, 100%. Because, like, when my podcast goes out, like, I'll get no, big long messages of
people reach out to
reach out to me, and I'll try. They'll comment on my podcast, and I remember someone saying, "Wow, you'd actually reply to people. I'll make it my job's worth to try and find every single message, every single comment, and I will reply to you." Sometimes I'm up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, "Right, have I replied?" But it does it can drain me as well, because you know when they're telling me, you know, I'm remembering.
You're reliving it as well.
But then when I'm writing back to them, I feel like...
you're their saving grace sort of thing.
I've done a good job.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, I believe, you know, you go through things in life for a reason. You do. I wouldn't... Marvin finds it very weird when I say this. I wouldn't change getting attacked. I wouldn't change getting groomed at 15 because I wouldn't be where I am today.
Yes, and you are. It is... I can understand Marv probably thinking that because it is very, you know... you don't deserve to be, what's her name, that. And I do get sometimes, it does, I've said it many a times on the podcast, so things go on in your life to make you the person you are today. But horrific stuff like that, Kira, you know, is very, you know, it's very scary and very, you know, to what you've experienced.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, going from that, how's family life now?
Wicked. Chaos. There's not a minute's peace, but it's wicked.
Is this your little boy?
With my little boy, yeah, my little dream. Yeah. God, I love being pregnant with him. When I found out I was pregnant, I think I was in shock for months because I just lost my dad 8 months before. And about 2 months after my dad died, because he was dying, he had COPD. Mm. COPD, my old man, he was my best mate. I found a tape and it was him. He made a recording to me saying, "When I get to heaven, I'm going to send you a baby." And I remember getting very angry about the tape, thinking, like, you know, I can't have kids. And I remember finding out, and yeah.
That day when you found out, was you just...
I was in shock. I was like, no, not me. Not me. And when he's come along, God, he's my little best mate. Like, he's, you know, he's got his own issues. He's autistic. Mm. Like, you know, we do speech therapy. We won't go mainstream school. I love him. I won't change him. Yeah, he does little sign language, and you've got to look at him, and he does his little Mr. Tumble thing.
He's his own little character,
he's a boss. He don't stop. He's literally where he gets his energy from. I do not know. Like, say he flooded my living room last week. I took my eye off him for 1 minute and put a plug in my sink and on my ceiling.
Yeah,
but he's top. Yes,
yeah,
absolutely love him. Yeah, so I love family.
He's a little character. Well, that's it. And considering, you know, the life that you've had, and you've had a very mad life, let's so to speak, to be where you're at now. And, you know, you've got to take a little bit of, you're a strong individual, you're a mum, you know, you love a mum life. You know, Marv, he's a great fella, you know, and you've got, you know, you're on a path to do what you want to, you know, like get a normality in life. And I just think that takes a lot of doing considering what you've been through. Mm. And people who hopefully come across this podcast can look to you and say, wow, what an inspirational woman. And they've possibly been through the same things that's gone on. But you come back even stronger. You know, you never give in and stuff like that.
It's just, literally, what don't kill you makes you stronger than me. I mean, I know that from when I was going to, you know, kill myself. And obviously now I look back on it and think, obviously I'm glad, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's made me stronger. And then obviously, you know, with the issues that I've been through with Marvin and out of jail, that's made me stronger. And I just think with my little boy, like, no matter what obstacles were going to come, we'll overcome them.
You'll overcome them all. Just come together. He's in a team. That's what happens, doesn't
it? And that's what life's about. And, you know, growing up, he always felt there was a part missing from me, and I knew what it was. It was my little lad.
He's the missing piece of the jigsaw, so to speak.
Yeah.
Finally, what's in the pipeline for Kira?
My book.
Your book?
My book's getting written. Yeah. I've been stalling on my book.
Yeah.
I stalled on the podcast because I do get very, very nervous.
Yeah, yeah.
About things. So, yeah, my book's in the pipeline. Obviously, Marv's just had...
Yeah, Marv's is obviously born in prison.
Two more podcasts coming up.
Yeah, you've got quite a few booked in, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got quite a few booked in. And then we'll see where that takes me. Just go with the flow. Just keep smashing it, putting out the podcast.
I'm raising awareness. Yeah, yeah.
You know, if anyone does watch it and want to reach out, like...
how can they contact you?
Facebook, Instagram, Kira Redmond.
Yeah.
You put my name at the bottom.
Yeah, we'll put it into the description.
Anyone can reach out to me and, you know, like I've said, if I can help, I'll help in any way that I can.
I just want to say, Kira, listen, what a strong individual you are. And I just want to thank you for sharing your the good, the bad, and the ugly, love.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.